language can be such a tool of such a weapon and such a like healing balm at the same time. It's really fascinating.
Herzlich willkommen. Du bist hier beim Medici Lesen Podcast gelandet, wo ich, Helen Daughtry, mit Buchclub-Mitgliedern und anderen spannenden Menschen darüber spreche, welche Rolle Bücher und Lesen in ihrem Leben spielen. Lass uns also nicht lang schnacken und einfach direkt in die Folge hüpfen. Bevor wir jetzt wirklich ins Gespräch hüpfen, grätsche ich nochmal ganz kurz dazwischen, um einfach kurz zu erklären, was sich in dieser Folge erwartet. Es ist nämlich keine normale, sage ich mal, Podcast-Aufnahme gewesen, sondern wir hatten ein Zoom-Meeting mit der Autorin Tara June Winch. Sie war bei unserem Buchclub-Treffen zu Wie rote Erde dabei und hat uns Fragen beantwortet. Also man hört die meiste Zeit mich und Tara June Winch, aber am Ende eben auch noch ein paar Mädels aus dem Buchclub, die sich dann auch noch getraut haben, Fragen zu stellen. Du hast im Snippet vorweg natürlich schon gehört, das Gespräch ist auf Englisch, also es wird gleich auf Englisch wechseln. Und es könnte auch sein, dass du gespoilert wirst, wenn du das Buch noch nicht beendet hast, weil wir einmal kurz auch über das Ende sprechen. Falls du also erst das Buch lesen oder hören möchtest, mach das und speichere dir die Folge. Komm dann hierhin wieder zurück, weil ich finde, es lohnt sich sehr. Es ist wirklich eine sehr sympathische Autorin und die uns in diesem Gespräch sehr viele spannende Einblicke gegeben hat. Deswegen halte ich mich jetzt kurz und wünsche dir ganz viel Spaß bei dieser Folge.
Hi.
Hi, everyone.
How are you?
Good. Where are you, Helen?
Yeah, great. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the invite. Or my suggestion, I think it was.
Yeah, we haven't tried that one yet. So we didn't have an author on our actual book club meeting. So it's a first time for us. Very much looking forward to that. So we did prepare some questions. Maybe just to start off, most of us read it in German. So you probably know the German edition. And we read that for like 4 weeks now and talked about different aspects of the book. Maybe you saw a little bit on social media, I don't know.
Like and lots of covers. It was nice. Made me really happy.
Oh, great. Maybe we start off with the question, like, what inspired you to write The Yield? Is it Yield in English?
Yield. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that your question? The inspiration? It's a funny one. So actually when I was writing my first book, Swallow the Air, in 2005, I was going out to my father's country and meeting relatives I hadn't met before and sort of reconnecting with that country where he was taken from, Wiradjuri country, in Nyurumbang, in fact. And I just happened to stumble upon, and what is pretty much actually prosperous, like my idea that how I had prosperous in my head, I stumbled upon a language class at an old mission building, and they were doing, it was Uncle Stan Grant Sr. who revitalized the Wiradjuri language. He was actually giving a class, and he was just revitalizing language. It was very early on. And he just had like an A4 type pamphlet, a very thin book of Wiradjuri words that he'd been working with elders and, you know, some of the documents like pastoralists or police record documents in language. And so he had, he was giving a class, and I it was really serendipitous that I was able to attend, basically. And after that, I really sort of, not fell in love with, but like I had this yearning to understand the language more, and I could see it so central to well-being and so central to that idea of like the bullet was the means of the physical subjugation and language was the means of the spiritual subjugation, and really that look, seeing that kind of non-violent violence And I could see that sort of in ways to the story that I was writing back then in 2006, or it was 2005 actually. And so I included about 20 Wiradjuri words in my first novel. And afterwards, I just felt like it wasn't complete. I felt like a sense of regret when the book came out that I didn't explore the linguistics more. And so that's what it really was. That was the inspiration. It was that promise after, you know, finishing one book and being disappointed in oneself to do it right, to have a redo it at this like very broad topic of language as sort of central to pain and also to healing for this family.
We did talk about the dictionary just before you came on, and we're wondering if, because you link it on your website, I didn't check out the app, but is it that this dictionary is updated, or how does it work? Is it like a fixed state now?
Yeah, well, I don't think language is really, especially with Indigenous languages that are being revitalized, they're never in a fixed state. It's always like a living organism in a sense, that more information comes in, and more documents are received, and there's alterations in spelling or in pronunciation. More information is always being sort of, like reincorporated into a language like that. So I think the app is probably the most up to date in that sense, but also the actual paper dictionary. I'm not sure you would be interested in it because it's not translated into German, but it also has different editions with additional words. And yeah, it's really, in terms of language revitalization, I think Wiradjuri is one of the most successful in Australia of how well it's done, and like, how complete the language has sort of been able to be taken back by Wiradjuri people. But there was 250 language groups in Australia. I'm sure you've talked about that. Yeah. And there's about 60 that are fluently spoken. And there's about 10 that are really seriously being revitalized additionally at the moment. So it's interesting. Yeah. Or to me, it was, yeah, to me.
Yeah, to us as well, because it's difficult to comprehend really if you haven't experienced anything similar to that. So yeah, and we just talked about that we haven't, or most of us haven't really read much about Australia before this book, so you probably have heard of things, but you are more aware after reading your book. So thank you for writing it and for making us aware. We also talked about, because you mentioned the class, like the language class, we talked about a video that was shared about a school in Australia that teached, is it Wiradjuri?
Wiradjuri.
Wiradjuri. And what do you think of that? Is that, I had to check the word, I wasn't even sure how you say that, cultural appropriation, or if it's a good thing that schools teach it?
Oh no, it's a great thing, because so many like general Australians, especially children like myself, I didn't grow up with the education system that they have now, where they're doing truth telling, and I'm sure you're all aware of the necessity of truth telling of history for generations to come, and will continue to be. So having actual, you know, appropriate history classes and incorporating language on the country that these children are going to school and they're living in, it's beautiful. It's like the entry into sense of reconciliation and a sense of belonging, actually, for every Australian. Because the only way to, I think Australia has a sort of crisis of identity in a lot of ways, because Australians haven't really reckoned with the past properly, especially with, and the education system has a lot to do with that. So having schools like independently curate language programs and truth-telling kind of history classes is super important in terms of changing the outlook and the idea of being Australian for the next generations, because it's a very like a very divisive kind of topic about what is Australia, what is being Australian, what is being an Aussie, especially when it comes to the topic of Indigenous Australians. Yeah. No, so that's good. It's not cultural appropriation. And what happens in these schools is you'll have Indigenous teachers teaching the language or being teaching assistants alongside other teachers. So it actually aids employment and continues culture at the same time. It's a fantastic program. Yeah.
We talked about there is no German audio version, but there's an English audio book. And we talked because one of us listened to it and she found it difficult because it's Australian accent, but also it was great because you could actually hear the Wiradjuri words properly pronounced. And we talked about that, this person reading it is actually an Aboriginal person. So, and also in the German translation, you can read in the end that there were sensitivity readers and like a lot of care, I feel like, went into like these productions. And I think that's kind of special. It's really good, and it would be great if more things like that happened, but I haven't really experienced a book project, like a translation project like that. And yeah, we thought that was really, really cool and really special. So maybe we'll try the audiobook afterwards again to really listen to it.
I think for an English is not as a first language speaker, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's just a second language or third language, sorry. Speaker, I don't think that I wouldn't recommend the audiobook because I think it's difficult even for English speakers to listen to it, just because you've got the three alternate voices, and then because you've got the layout of the dictionary, hearing that on audio can be quite stilting. I honestly will just stick with the text, and maybe there'll be a German audiobook in the future down the line. But yeah, I would stay clear of that. But the actual narrator is a film director called Tony Briggs. He narrated it, and he's actually Wurundjeri. It's actually not Wiradjuri. It's not his language. But we sort of wanted him to do it and invited him to do it because just to show how easy language acquisition is and how, like, willing even other Indigenous people speaking other Indigenous languages were to learn their, you know, neighbour's language. And he actually ended up buying, beforehand he'd bought the, it was after, sorry, just got back from vacation today, I'm a bit tired, I'm sunstruck. He bought the film rights to The Yield after doing the audiobook, so he's making the film. And he did one, a great film that you should all watch, and you can easily get it from in Germany, now I can't remember the name. But his film, I'll find it. It's got an international name. But it's about Aboriginal soul singers in Australia during the Vietnam War. And it's a true story that he's written about his mother. I'll find it for you. But I can send you, Helen, like a bunch of film and book recommendations if you'd like as a jumping off point.
So yeah, that would be great. Yeah, thank you.
I'll do that straight after we talk. And there's another one. I don't know if you guys have seen Follow the Rabbit Proof Fence. That's a really accessible film, international film. Yeah.
Yeah, we wanted, because sometimes if there is like a film adaption, we would do like a film watching evening. But this one, I watched it a couple of years ago, but you can't see it there's no place online where you can actually stream it now. So that's a shame. But we did talk about that film.
The other one is the Sapphire is the one I was talking about. I just looked it up.
Okay.
By the narrator. It's such a beautiful film. But yeah, I'll send you a little list of books.
Great, yeah. Thank you. So the
YouTube or Muji or some other alternate website. Some of these.
Yeah,
some,
maybe.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. So the Yield will be a film at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. We'll have to watch it then. Because you said you invited Tony Briggs is his name, isn't it? Mm. Of the narrator. Did you have influence in like the audiobook production and the translation in other languages?
No, I mean, German was probably the most intensive in terms of translations, and the translator, I think, was very thorough and very professional, but I wouldn't know because I don't speak German, so I don't know what it actually is on the page. It's quite funny if you just sort of trust the narrator that they understand, especially when you're using metaphor and like very sometimes bizarre sort of poetic language, that they can actually understand it. But she was being very thorough in terms of the history of the German language and wanted to be really careful. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't remember some of the terms that she was really, really sensitive with and made me aware. And it was really interesting for me too.
I think like one of the bigger ones is race.
Yeah, the way that it's written, it was like highly charged in German. I think the word was native. So, in terms of how much I work with the translator, normally not very much, but with German a lot. And you know, to a point where I was like, German translation. I was getting angry about it. But it was necessary. Yeah, it was necessary when you look at history. It shows you how powerful language can be, you know, and how historically significant it can be. Even Polish just came out maybe a month or so ago, and I just did an interview a couple of days ago and with the woman, and she was talking about Polish as an indigenous language, and they do have minority indigenous languages in Poland, and sort of that after the Second World War, that revival, like how central language was in the rebuilding of, even after the Warsaw Uprising, and the rebuilding of the city, which was so fascinating. So languages can be such, and that was because of the obviously the Soviet and the German, you know, destruction of the Polish language in that era, in that region, and also obviously those who died. But language can be such a tool, of such a weapon, and such a like healing balm at the same time. It's really fascinating. In all countries, not just in Australia. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that question kind of fits, but we were wondering about how differently the book was perceived, like with people like us, but also with other Aboriginal people. Did you find there was a difference in perception, or not so much?
No, not really. With, you mean people like you as in Germans, or like non-speaking English people?
Non-Aboriginal people, probably.
No, I think there's been like varied reactions, and it'll depend on the sort of awareness and education of the reader. But, yeah, sometimes it's emotional because they felt like they didn't know, or they weren't taught a history. And, I mean, some people don't like the book. For sure, but that's any book. But in terms of like Indigenous people that have read it, they've I've had a really positive experience, and it's like brought us closer together. And I think there's been some books that have been published in the last few years that have sort of almost been in conversation with my book by other Indigenous authors. And that's really inspiring, especially the publishing industry. It's sort of changed since the book came out. I'm sort of an advisor in a sense to a bunch of the big five publishers in Australia, where I help them find Indigenous writers and especially encourage them to bilingually publish, because it's something that's been quite scary for publishers in Australia, is to have, you know, an Indigenous language and English side by side. So I think it's been a positive response. And obviously when you say people like you, like, so non-Australians are going to have a different response, but it's been really fascinating, like I said, with Polish, to hear stories about how central language has been in conflict in other people's countries through reading the translations. Yeah, it's been great. Does anyone else want to ask questions, or did you keep all your questions, Helen? Did you keep, like, told
we
them?
We collected them. I didn't allow them. No, we collected them beforehand, but maybe someone would like to ask a question themselves.
Nope. Oh, yeah.
Hi, Tara. Yeah. just a short or minor follow-up question. In the beginning, you said you weren't satisfied with one of the books you've written, like you didn't did justice of the topic. Which book is that? Like, I haven't checked all of your books, so I don't know. I would find it on Google, but maybe you can tell us.
Oh, that one was Swallow the Air, but none of my other books have been translated into German except for this one.
Okay.
I mean, you're speaking English, so it's like a very slight book. It'll only take like a 2 days to read if you're mm-hmm. interested. That one's been studied on high school curriculums for like over 10 years now, which is really
great.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been used as a teaching tool. But still, yeah, I think that's every writer's experience, that there's a sense of regret after, or any musician or any artist or anyone that does anything in life, there's a sense of regret after you do it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, thanks for being here. It's so great to have you on the Zoom meeting.
I can say another 5 minutes if anyone's got any more questions.
I also, hi Tara, first of all, thank you again for being here. I also had a follow-up on that same question or same statement. What are your regrets about this novel then? Anything that you feel you left out mention?
It's so funny. There's so many, because even yesterday my friend is reading it in French, and I was just like looking over the shoulder reading along in French, and I was thinking, oh God, that's so terrible. But especially the paragraphs of the third person August section, I think that that story should have been tighter and I think more clearer. But my thinking at the time was, because this character is so sort of broken and confused and sort of dislocated from her culture and family and just herself and her body and, you know, her spirit in general, then I, in my mind, I remember thinking this, I wanted the writing to be in that similar style, which I think was a bad choice. I think it should have been, I should have separated the character from, like, the art from the artist, the character from that kind of the character arc from the actual artistry of the writing. Yeah, that's a huge regret. Massive. And just heaps of stuff, like being silly with language. And probably, I don't know how far you've got into the book, but I don't want to do spoilers.
We're finished.
Yeah. Also, like, around the protest stuff, I don't think that was really clear if there was, like, who was, like, villainous and like, right intention versus right action with a lot of the characters when they all sort of came together. oh, I could just stay here all night and tell you about my regrets. The list is endless. But I think that's just normal. I think every book is one trying to rewrite the previous book. Yeah.
That is so interesting. Thank you. So are you trying to do that right now with the current one?
100%. Yeah. So this one that I'm writing two, one set in Switzerland and it's sort of about eternal return and time, but talking about colonialism as well. And the other, this one in particular, the other one is called In the Event of My Death, and it's about a defecting Aboriginal World War II soldier who defects in Europe and stays here. And In the Event of My Death were the letters that soldiers had in their pockets. That had their like last will and testament, or you know, some kind of admission or truth telling or whatever it is, or even regrets. And so on the outside of the envelope, or in English in any case, it would say in the event of my death, so obviously to be opened when they die. And so this book, the title is called In the Event of My Death, and the whole thing is written in a letter format. And the character is basically in a set. Well, no, I don't want to feel like I'm like repeating the same book, but it's in my mind. It's Poppy's voice that kind of sing song storytelling, like wandering from place to place, and one story leads on to another and opens up another door. It's written in that kind of way. So, yeah, it's like trying to redo the book before, because I think a big response that I noticed was that most people liked the Poppy sections the most and the other stuff in the book kind of fell away. It was a huge, like very obvious reaction. And so I thought, oh, I can, that voice comes really easily and I can definitely tell a story that way. But obviously distinctively another character. But yeah, that's the rewriting that I'm doing now.
We did vote for a favorite character yesterday. We did like I don't know, like a review, and Poppy was by far the most favorite character in the book.
So, okay, yeah. So onto a good thing.
Yeah. Jackie has another question.
Yeah, just a short one. How long did it take you to write The Yield?
Yeah, so maybe it was like 10 years, but in terms of, but that was like gestation, because so much of writing for me is sort of lucid dreaming and thinking about the idea and, you know, following it, even if I'm doing other things in my life. So there was 10 years in terms of following the same idea, but this actual sitting down and gathering all those notes over the 10 years, because I did have all my paper notes still, paper notebooks. In terms of gathering it all, writing it all down, constructing it, putting it together, it was quite a fast process. Maybe it was about 10 months, because it had been living in my head for all that time, that which is quite short for me because I write really, really slow. So, yeah, 10 months was really like, it felt like a really fast sprint in a sense. But yeah, because it lived in my head for 10 years and I was slowly chipping at something, I think that's why it only took, less than a year to get down on the page. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, good luck with the rest of your book club. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time, like on your return day of holidays. So
yeah, and
we appreciate that.
And I'm moving the same day. I had to go to my new apartment this morning as well. So
okay.
Extra
wow, time, thank you.
So I apologize. But thanks
thank
again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Shen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Das war's für heute. Ich habe mich unglaublich gefreut, dass du eingeschaltet hast und vor allem bis zum Ende dran geblieben bist. Falls dir die Folge gefallen hat, dann abonniere den Podcast am besten, damit du auch in Zukunft keine Folge verpasst. Bis zum nächsten Mal.